does no money go to? What is the payment? Either wants to know what it is.
You know, that was the model we discussed about the earth, and we discussed all of the elements. The process of Adhyayana Yoga are very hard to follow. So, Hatha Yoga is like something that is very easy. That's what we call it, Yama and Niyama. It's very hard to follow.
Any other
questions? Everything you do, why should you do it again? But otherwise you will get a reaction from the recovery.
Importance of Brahmachari. Without Brahmachari you cannot progress in the future.
Yeah, we'll go into that more in future classes. This canto is very heavy on mundane sex life. Very powerful instruction. It gets much heavier. When Kapila Dev begins to speak, it gets real.
Oh, as far as Brahmachari is concerned, I read something that if one does not discharge the sin and throw his body, then he can get the body of Brahma.
Or Brahma. As far as I understand, you have to practice Varnashram perfectly for 100 lifetimes to attain Brahma's purpose. So it could be like that, but I've heard that. I don't know if it'd just be one lifetime.
It is written by His Holiness Bhaktivinoda Swami in his book on Brahmacharya.
He says that?
Yeah.
Can you give a reference? Or?
I can't believe them, you know, because
the book says, but I think he says the person can enter Brahmaloka,
no,
becoming a Brahma. That's what I think. That is not him, sure. One does not drop it off the human lifetime, then this promotes to the loka.
Maybe.
Yeah, same, Brahmacharya.
Okay. So fishes means the destination will be elevation. That's the point. They're saying if someone practices Naishtika Brahmachari, does not pass semen, whole life, they're saying then he will go to Brahmaloka. Yeah, definitely there's elevation as far as you go. If you practice Varnashram perfectly for 100 lifetimes, then you go to Brahmaloka. Okay. I don't know if just one lifetime or, but definitely get elevated. Material civilization is based on discharging semen as much as possible. And Vedic civilization is based on semen retention as much as possible. That is considered success. Material civilization is the opposite. Vedic culture is the opposite. Any other points?
Talk about yoga, bhakti yoga being a component of every other yoga. So any other yoga to connect, there has to be a bhakti component attached to that. The context for looking. Ragdama Muni not only practiced Ashtanga yoga, but he also practiced the three of the laws of bhakti. Shravana, Kirtana and
Vishnu. Yes, so Dhyana yoga or Kama yoga or Dhyana yoga or Ashtanga yoga. Whatever the process is, without bhakti, then it is, you will not attain the ultimate destination. You will always fall short. So. Any other point?
When devotees get reciprocation from Krishna, and devotees get reciprocation from Buddha.
So you have to take your choice. Krishna is much nicer. Any other point?
Demonic people want to be cheated, and Krishna arranges people, persons, so that they can be cheated.
Really, about that?
No.
You read that. Okay, very good. Very good, Shepa. Doing your homework.
What a change.
Doesn't matter. The fact that you did it, that's very good. Any other point?
If we look at the process of
Ashtanga process, yama, niyama, things which must be accepted, things which must be rejected, like that. But we can apply all of them to devotional service. Everything can become or has meaning when it's connected to Krishna. It's called yukta vairagya. Like that. So these principles, when connected to bhakti yoga, then they can serve a purpose. This is just technical information for your interest and benefit.
So this Swadhyay is interesting in India how it is misused. There is somebody by the name Pandurang Shastri Athavalya, and he holds this program called Swadhyay. I think he left it for previous back. But he used to hold this Swadhyay, and a lot of people from Maharashtra and Gujarat, they are followers of him, and they apparently know all the shlokas from Bhagavad Gita. The self-study is a bit of a deceptive terminology, because when self-study, they don't then go by the disciplic succession. They say, okay, we can learn ourselves, so disciplic succession is not required. So Pandurang Shastri Athavalya himself was not having any spiritual master or anything. So his disciples also don't have any spiritual master. And there's no Diksha Guru. They just attend some his lectures and come back. There's no activity beyond it. This can be slightly tricky definition for the head.
Yes, the Prabhupada says in one of the purports tonight, then he says that if you want to be cheated, then Krishna will reciprocate. If you have impure motives, then Krishna will reciprocate. He'll give you a cheating guru like that, and then you'll be misled. So the heart has to be sincere. So if people come to Krishna consciousness and we preach to them, but some of them can't take it up because their motive is not pure. But if their motive is sincere, there's not too much jnana or too much karma, and they're proper candidates for bhakti, then they can take up the process.
Does Swadhyaya do self-study or study of the self? Swadhyaya actually is study of the self, introspection. It is not self-study.
No, both.
Sorry. As long as you understand the proper meaning, that's the point.
And what is the need for this yama niyama? What does it actually mean? Accept and reject. How does one fit the cleanliness into rejection and acceptance?
Prabhupada defines it here. Prabhupada says control of the senses. He calls yama control of the senses. And he calls niyama strict following of rules and regulations. But in other places, we've heard it described as being accepting things which are favorable for spiritual life and rejecting things which are unfavorable for spiritual life. So, Prabhupada is control of the senses for yama. Non-bite, ahimsa, satya, asetya, brahmacharya, asetya, control of the senses. Maybe that could be terms acceptance. And niyama. What does yama mean? What's the
rules?
Yama?
Yama means rules.
Yama
means
rules. Ni means negative, right? So yama means, I don't know what it means, that's all I'm asking. But that yama must mean something like acceptance as far as I can see. These are things you must accept. And niyama, rejection, contentment, tapa, shajaya. Based on Prabhupada's definition, then yama is control of the senses. So this is sense control, five sense control. And strictly following rules and regulations. Things that you should not. things that you should not do, rejection. This has something to do with that. So like that, we have to do some research maybe so we get a clearer definition of that. So. Any other points?
We discussed about the Kartambu Muni worshipping for 10,000 years, which was disappeared. And obviously we had to have a 100,000 year span of life to achieve that. And then we discussed about Treta Yuga Yajnas, but then all that can be achieved in Kali Yuga just by the hundred and now,
If you chant properly.
If you chant sincerely.
Not just sincerely, but attentively, without offences. Like that. Chanting is a science. It's a process. One must follow it properly. So, in the beginning of this chapter, then Vidura is asking Maitreya, please tell me about Swayambhuva Manu, his descendants. He wants deeper knowledge of the activities of Swayambhuva Manu. How did he populate the universe? Like that. And then he asks about his children, his direct descendants. Priyavrata, Uttanapa, Devahuti, Akuti, and Prasuti. And then specifically, he asks about Devahuti and her marriage with Kardama because he knows that their offspring was an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapiladeva. So he wants to specifically hear about Kapiladeva. So he's specifically asking, please tell me about Kardama and Devahuti, their union, like that. And then Maitreya begins to speak, he begins to describe the austerity of Kardama Muni and Devahuti and their qualification to beget purified offspring. If one has purified consciousness, one can beget purified offspring. So he begins to describe this history like that. So tonight we'll go from verses 8 to 15. And we'll see the fruit, we'll begin to see the fruit of Kardama Muni's austerities. He's following the Ashtanga Yoga process. He's following the Ashtanga Yoga process, but he is a personalist. He's a Vaishnava. He's following it with bhakti. He's not an impersonalist. His goal is not mixed, it's pure. So we'll see tonight what the results, the beginning of his results of his meditation. And also there'll be we'll see the beginning of the analysis of his own motivations while performing this activity. So this part of the Bhagavatam is very wonderful and it just increases in its nectar. So please stay tuned.
So maybe I had a question.
Yeah.
We see that Devahuti, like Prabhupada writes, that she was also perfect in the 8-fold perfection of yoga. So I was just wondering, being a princess, how come she was, she had practiced yoga, and then, because princesses don't go to guru schools and all that. So why had she practiced 8-fold perfection of yoga? Because she knew she was going to America.
Yeah, because these are Prajapatis. So at this point in time, there's no one else in the universe. Right, we're talking about the original personalities in the universe who understand their great responsibility that they have to propagate to fulfill the Lord's mission of populating the universe. So they take their service very seriously. And she purifies her consciousness by performing Ashtanga Yoga. Therefore she's called Yoga Lakshana, or one who has the ornaments of yoga. One who has received the auspicious, who's become purified by her austerity. Okay. Does that answer the question?
So she does that to purify her consciousness so that she will get good children?
Yeah. That's her motivation, because that's their savour. Their savour is to populate the universe. So if they don't have the right consciousness, the universe will just be populated with demoniac personalities. You saw what happened in the previous, earlier in the canto, when Diti, right, approached Kashyapa at an inauspicious time and demoniac progeny. So if the entire, if all the Prajapatis became overwhelmed with sense gratification, then the entire universe would just become demoniac. Like that. So they take it as their service to be like that. That's the point. The point is that every activity, in every material activity, when it is done in service of Krishna, then it purifies one. Because it's an offering to the Lord. So begetting children, right, is an activity which will purify the consciousness. Normally, it contaminates the consciousness. Materials become contaminated by sex activity. But Vaishnavas, because they offer that to Krishna, that is called Yukta Vairagya, then they become purified by the same activity. It uplifts the consciousness and attracts all species. So it's a service to Krishna. Okay. So tonight we'll do verses 8 to 15. We were going to do verses 8 to 21, but we'll do 8 to 15. I'm very, very tired after the retreat. I needed a break, and I haven't had a break because we had the classes. So I tried to get to verse 21, but I couldn't mentally coach. So we've got it to verse 15. But we'll make up. Then in the Satya Yuga, the lotus-eyed Supreme Personality of Godhead, being pleased, showed himself to that Kadha Mamuni and displayed his transcendental form, which can be understood only through the Vedas. Sri Krishna Chandra.
Here 2 points are very significant. The first is that Kadha Mamuni attained successful yoga practice in the beginning of Satya Yuga, when people used to live for 100,000 years. Kadha Mamuni had attained success, and the Lord, being pleased with him, showed him his form, which is not imaginary. Sometimes the impersonalists recommend that one can arbitrarily concentrate one's mind on some form he imagines or which pleases him. But here it is very clearly said that form which the Lord showed to Kadha Mamuni by his divine grace is described in the scriptures in the Vedic literature. Shabda Brahma, the forms of the Lord are clearly indicated in the Vedic literature. Kadha Mamuni did not discover any imaginary form of God. As alleged by Lascelles, he actually saw the eternal, blissful and transcendental form of the Lord.
So what are the points here?
Kadha Mamuni did see the Lord, has seen the Lord. So that's an inspiration for us all.
When the Kadha Mamuni saw the Lord, he took a two-form, Lord Krishna or Vishnu?
Vishnu. We'll say in the next two verses.
It is incorrect to interpret the Vedas as leading to impersonal absolute truth. And actually the people do not follow the verified gurus, and then they try to basically read the Vedas on their own accord, they reach the impersonalistic, you know, the conclusion. So here it is clearly said the transcendental form of the Lord can be understood through the Vedas. So Vedas are leading to the personalistic aspect. It defeats the Mayavad conception.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the Mayavad philosophy is demoniac.
Mm-hmm.
It is not Vedic.
One of the things that comes to mind here is bhakti has got a lot of component of service in it. Whereas when we read, especially this section, that's not coming out much.
Because your sangha is not so much an active process? You know what I mean?
Yes. Someone meditates and then has darshan on the Lord, but what we understand is
so we see that Prabhupada explained in the previous purports that we read last night that Kadha Mamuni performed Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. So this is first class devotional service. Hearing and chanting about the Lord is the topmost devotional service. And Smaranam is the goal. Always remember Krishna, like that. So therefore, he's performing bhakti. It's not that he's just performing like dry ashtanga, but there's bhakti, Prabhupada explained, mixed in like that. So then the point is that when you get to, if you follow the Ashtanga way of reaching the Lord, when you reach the Lord, Paramatma realization, described by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasa Rita Sindhu, Paramatma realization is Shanta Rasa. So when it comes in Bhakti Rasa Rita Sindhu and they describe the five rasas, the first is Shanta. Prabhupada points out at that point in the Nectar of Devotion, different acharyas argue whether Shanta is even a rasa, because it is devoid of, like you said, says passive adoration. Dasya Rasa is active service. So you're right, that if they get to the point of realizing the Lord and then there is no service, right, then it can be argued whether or not that is bhakti. Mm-hmm. It can be bhakti in the sense it can be shanta rasa, that is there. Just like if someone is a rock in Vaikuntha, then that may be shanta rasa, adoration for the Lord. There's no active service that takes place because the form does not allow that, but still the adoration for the Lord is there. The bhakti or the feeling of adoring the Lord is there. So that is bhakti, that is devotion. Okay. Does that make some clarification?
Well, just adding to the Prabhu's point, Prabhu, Karma is indirectly or directly doing a service because he's going to produce progeny now. So that the Lord's work as well. And in case, if the point comes out of bhakti, even Guru Maharaj doesn't do any service, he just went to the forest and just meditated for the Lord, and the Lord still appeared.
Yeah, but then once again he was chanting Om Namo Bhagavate. So here's the point. First, Prahlad Maharaj said, right, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam. Archanam is where all the angas come in. Just like Rupa Goswami says, Nectar Devotion, 64 angas. Right? Most of them are connected to deity worship. That's Archanam. Mm-hmm. Like that. But still, Shravanam and Kirtanam seem to be first. And to see the primary principle.
So coming to your previous point, Prabhupada makes at many places there is no difference practically between Jnana Yoga and Jnana and Ashtanga Yoga. Both, they're both are same.
Goals are the same, but the practices are different.
Yeah, practices are one is theoretical, where there is the Jnana, and the practical part is Ashtanga, but in terms of their goals, it is one and the same.
Yeah, well, it can be. It depends on the person. If a Vaishnava is doing it, Kadama is a Vaishnava. He's performing Ashtanga Yoga to realize Vishnu, and he realizes Vishnu. That is Vaishnava, like that. But if an impersonalist does it, then the goal is different. So it depends on the motivation of the practitioner. Any other points? So, as we see here, that the Lord is pleased with bhakti. If there is no bhakti, you cannot realize the Lord. Now, Prabhupada will point out in this section of verses that we'll study tonight, the whole point of Krishna consciousness is what? What is the point? Why are we doing this?
Love of God.
Yes, the same vision of the Lord. In other words, to realize Krishna, to see Krishna, to have revelation of Krishna, to meet Krishna. That is the point. That is the point of the entire process. Right? We want to have darshan of Krishna. We want to be able to realize Krishna, to fully understand Him. So this is the goal of our devotional service. So Krishna reciprocates when bhakti is there. If there's no bhakti, then Krishna does not reciprocate. You'll never see Krishna unless there is devotion. So when one has devotion, then Krishna becomes more and more realized. Just like the more devotion you have, then the more you will get reciprocation from the deities. Just like, I do my puja to Guru Raj, and then when the days that I do it with more devotion, I get realization. Right? We go further towards Krishna. We realize Krishna more. We have deeper understandings of Krishna.
But when the bhakti is not there, when the endeavor is not there to please Krishna, then what takes place? There is not so much reciprocation from Krishna. Krishna does not reveal himself, right, in our consciousness, in our heart. So it is all to do with the bhakti.
And the more bhakti we have in our practice, the more Krishna becomes revealed to us. So we see Kardama is practicing his yoga process, but with great bhakti, or great devotion. And because of that bhakti or that devotion, then Krishna is revealing himself. Now what Kardama sees is not speculation. Right? Prabhupada points out it is authorized by the Vedas. Because the Vedas are emanating from the breath of the Lord. So therefore, what is stated in the Vedas, the Prabhupada points out in the Brahma Samhita. In the Brahma Samhita, we see Lord Brahma explains Krishna's form. That Krishna is a cowherd boy. That he has a peacock feather in his hair. That he wears a golden dhoti. He describes all of these things, his tree bunga form. Right? He's playing the flute. All these points are described. Right? So this is authorized. This is coming from the Vedas. So Kardama is not speculating, but what is seen is being authorized. This point is that everything must have authorization. Just like anything you do in the world, right? If you do something improper against the law, automatically the authorities will come and say, what is your authorization? Why are you driving over the speed limit? What is your authorization? Do you have permission to do it? Like that. So there must be authorization. The Vedas give us authorization. Right? They say you can do this, you can do that. Right? And they say this is God. Right? If it is not authorized by Shastra, then it's just speculation. Someone says, oh, this is God, or that is God, or this is the way to meet God, or you don't need a guru. What is their authorization? Krishna says, evam parampara praptam. Right? He says parampara. So just like Jagannatha Prabhu was saying, one guru is saying, you don't need guru. You don't need guru. So what is that authorized? Right? Not found in the Vedic literature. Why are the Vedas full? Why are the Puranas full of guru and disciple, guru and disciple? Krishna had guru? Ramachandra had guru? Who did not have guru? Like that. And then suddenly, no need for guru. Right? Reject the authorization. Just do whatever you want to do. God is in your heart. God is everywhere. Yeah, good luck. You go and find your God that's in your heart. Whatever that is. Right? Whatever you realize, who knows what you'll realize. And you go, God is everywhere, okay, you go find that. Right? And have a very blissful existence. But if you follow the authority of the Vedas, then what you'll realize will be far more satisfying to the heart, to the soul, in due course of time.
Can we say that love and surrender also is very important? Surrender. Without surrender, there is no love.
Okay. Bhakti means those things. Surrender, sharana, love, prema, bhakti, this is the same thing. All those things are the same.
I just want to ask, you mentioned about bhakti when you wish to meet Krishna. You seem to Padamagana, he basically mentions specifically is to attain love for Krishna and not basically get liberation or not. So when you say meet Krishna, do you really mean to attain love for Krishna?
Yeah, I mean that's the clarification there, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches that the goal is prema, Krishna prema, like that. Prabhupada is mentioning in this section of the Bhagavatam, he's mentioning that, we'll see as we go through in the next few purports, like Prabhupada says in purport 11, he says, the perfection of yoga does not terminate in voidness or in impersonalism. On the contrary, the perfection of yoga is attained when one actually sees the personality of God in his eternal form. So based on that statement, then that's why I'm presenting it like that. But Mahaprabhu says that the goal of life, premata, the top goal is prema. It's about love for Krishna, like that. You can't see Krishna if you don't have love for him. So you can say it like that. Okay, so I'm going based on what Prabhupada said. Of course we should be selfless, that should be pure love. Which means Radharani says, or Mahaprabhu says in Shikshastika, whether I see you or do not see you, still you are my Lord. And six Goswamis, as Prabhupada points out, we're not saying they've seen Krishna, they're saying where is Krishna? So that is love. But then Prabhupada said the culmination, the perfection is that you will see Krishna. Okay. So we should have a desire to see Krishna. We should want to see Krishna. But we can only see Krishna if we develop pure love for Krishna. So it's like a technical. Thank you for bringing that up. Any other points? Kadama Muni saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is free from material contamination. In his eternal form, effulgent like the sun, wearing a garland of white lotuses and water lilies. The Lord was clad in spotless yellow silk, and his lotus face was fringed with slick dark locks of curly hair. Adorned with a crown and earrings, he held his characteristic conch, disc and mace in three of his hands, and a white lily in the fourth. He glanced about in a happy smiling mood, whose sight captivates the hearts of all devotees. So we see here, this is what is being described in terms of the Kshatrik vision of the Lord. You cannot speculate on what God looks like. We must understand what God looks like based on the presentation or the descriptions within the Vedas, within the Shastra. Right? So they are describing the Lord's very beautiful form. This is the perfection of beauty. There's nothing more beautiful than Krishna. There's nothing more beautiful than the Lord's form. Someone will argue, from an atheistic standpoint, why does God hold a lily? Why does he hold a club? Why does he hold a conch? Why does he hold a chakra? Why doesn't he hold, you know, something else and something else and something else? Because he is God, that's his prerogative. But that is perfection, and it is the most beautiful thing like that. So this can only be revealed by following the correct process, and it can only be understood by accepting the authority of the Vedas. If one does not accept the authority of the Vedas, then you'll never understand Krishna, God. You'll speculate continuously.
So every form of the law is associated with the name. What is the name of this one?
At this point in time, this is said to be Vishnu or Narayan, like that, generally. I don't know if it mentions the specific.
Because it is a standard of the self. Is it the Paramatma form?
Same form as Paramatma. Paramatma has this form, Narayan has this form, Vishnu has this form. Right, so we'll have to see if it's mentioned. Who it actually is, but this is the same form. A golden streak on his chest. What is that golden streak called? No, it said here, it said a golden streak on his chest. What is that called? It is called Sri Matsa. Like that. Remember that for your exam. And the famous Kostuba gem. What is that gem? That gem is the most attractive of all gems. The most beautiful gem that you've ever seen in this material world. Nothing can compare to the gems which are in the spiritual world. The most beautiful gems in this world are not comparable to the gems in the spiritual world. And of all the gems in the spiritual world, the most beautiful is the Kostuba mani, which the Lord eternally wears on his chest. And he wears another gem called the moon locket, like that. I've described that one before. Bhakra is the
Chakya.
Chakshatya.
And he learns Vaijanti Mala.
Vaijanti Mala. Mm. That means
long,
the
long
gala. Yeah. Long, long gala. Okay. So he wears Kastuva Mani and he wears the moon locket. Does anyone, I think I've described it before, does anyone remember the moon locket? Any remember about it? Yes. Do you remember anything about the moon locket?
All the souls or something are there?
No.
Yeah, I read somewhere that.
The moon locket, you know that picture you have on your wall in your laundry? Krishna?
Yeah, yeah.
Radha and Krishna?
Yeah.
Go and have a look close at his chest. Have you ever looked? Closely? On his chest? Go and have a look close on his chest. When I used to chant in your laundry, I still always meditate on that. Like that. You'll see Kastuba Mani, and then you'll see below that is the moon locket. So the moon locket is made of congealed moonshine. Right? When the moon shines at night time, the locket, the jewel, melts and enters into the moonshine. And then at the end of the night, in the day, then the moonshine enters into the locket and congeals, turns hard into a jewel, which is the colour of moonshine, like pearl, right? And then stays there all day, during the day. And it has like a cow imprinted onto it, like that. And then at night time, when the moon comes out, the jewel melts and enters back into the moonshine, then during the day. This is our God. Show us any God who compares to our God. No one compares to our God.
Can you explain the Shiva Pratibha? Is it a hair on Krishna's chest?
Yeah, it's a golden tuft of hair. It's described many places in the Bhagavatam. Golden tuft of hair. Lakshmi, Devi, she aspired to become a gopi. So she does austerities in a place called Tapavan, Srivan in Vrindavan, on the western side of the Jamuna River. So she does austerities there, but she cannot break her mood of awe and reverence to become a gopi. She will not take birth in the womb of a gopi. She wants to join the Rasa dance, but she won't take birth in the womb of a gopi in order to become qualified to enter into the Rasa dance. She has to follow the gopis. But she can't get off her mood. She wants to be in the Rasa dance, but she wants to still be Lakshmi. So then Krishna said, then I will give you the place on my chest as Sri Vatsa. So she takes that form of Sri Vatsa on his chest, and that way she's always close to him, and she can witness the Rasa dance from that position. But she can't get the form of a gopi and enter the Rasa dance.
How do you understand that Lakshmi is a form of Srimati Radharani?
She's an expansion.
And she cannot get birth from the womb of the world because Srimati Radharani can.
Because the mood is different, see. The bhava is different. Just like Narayan, and everyone worships Krishna, that's the point. When Krishna performs Rasa Lila, if you read in the 10th canto, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries, then it describes that when Krishna performs Rasa Lila, all the other incarnations of Krishna, all the Narayan forms, come to watch the Rasa Lila. They come to watch the Rasa dance. Because it's it's the topmost pastime of the Lord. It has the most, is the most pleasurable pastime of the Lord. So all the other incarnations want to come and witness that also. So that means all the expansions of Radharani, Lakshmi, all the Lakshmis, and Sita, Devi, and all the other expansions, they're also attracted to be in that. But they can't break their moon, so therefore they can't enter into that pastime. Does that make sense? Does that answer what you're asking? Okay. So, a golden streak on his chest, what is that called?
Shiva.
Okay. And the famous Kastuba gem. Suspended from his neck. You have to know these things.
What is the moon locket called in that?
I don't know. We'll have to find one. Try to find that.
Chandrapal.
Chandra.
Moon Chandra.
locked in his heart.
I hope you're correct. Because you can't speculate when you come this close to Krishna. So you have to know these things, because one day you might meet Krishna. What? Yeah, the point is that one day you might meet Krishna. That's the whole point of Prabhupada's making this part of the Bhagavatam. This whole part of the Bhagavatam is teaching us that we want to meet Krishna. Right? So one day you might meet him. So you have to be able to identify him. You have to know, is this actually Krishna? Or is this just a figment of my imagination? And you're looking at it, and his chest, what's on the chest? Right? Is Kasturbamani there? Is Srivastava there? Right? Is Munlaka there? Does it have cowl? Okay. Right. Peacock feather is there. Golden donkey is there. Right? Flute is there. Yeah. All these things you have to see. All the auspicious marks of Krishna. What's on his hands? Right? What's on his feet? All these things are described. You have to know all these things.
Famous sloka, Kasturi Tilakam Lalata Palake Vakshastale Kamstubham Nathadre Navamokikam Karatale Venum Sare Kankanam Sarvange Harichandanam Chakalayu Kanteja Mukhavadi Gopasri Parivesuto Vijayate Gopala Chudama. In that we find this moon locket and Srivatsa is not mentioned.
No. Doesn't mean they're not there.
No, I'm not saying that because this is one of the Vedic shlokas.
Yeah, it's one shloka, but there's many shlokas which describe. And if you look into the writings of the Goswamis, they'll describe many of these details also. Okay. Bhagavatam here is saying Srivastava. A golden streak on his chest, the famous Kasturba gem suspended from his neck, he stood in the air with his lotus feet placed on the shoulders of
Garuda.
But the Lord in his transcendental eternal form have understood the description from the variety Vedic version. These descriptions are certainly not the imagination of the Nava Muni. Declarations of the Lord are beyond material perception, as admitted even by impersonalists like Shankaracharya. The right supreme personality of Godhead has nothing to do with the material creation. The right is the transcendental Lord, his body, his form, his dress, his instruction, his words are not manufactured by the material images, but are all conferred in the Vedic literature. By the form of yoga, Pandavi Muni actually saw the Supreme Lord as he is. There was no point in seeing an imagined form of God after practicing yoga for 10,000 years. The perfection of yoga, therefore, does not terminate in voidness or impersonalism. On the contrary, the perfection of yoga is attained when one actually sees the personality of Godhead in his eternal form. The process of Krishna consciousness is to deliver the form of Krishna directly. The form of Krishna is described in the operative Vedic literature, Brahma Samhita. His abode is made of chitani, stone, and the Lord plays there as a cowherd boy, and served by many jars of gopis. These descriptions are operative, and the Krishna conscious person takes them directly, acts on them, preaches them, and practices devotional service that he enjoys in the operating description.
So what are the points here?
When we studied the second canto, a lot of this was being described in the first steps towards further realization, where one is advised to meditate on each and every part of the body of the Lord.
So what is that point?
The point is that unless we have this kind of knowledge, we won't be able to know what to meditate on. Because people say I'm meditating, but when you ask them what they are meditating, sometimes they don't, nobody is able to describe unless one is devotion, you know, you were describing them. You see many people coming to the temple and sitting like this with two fingers in the evening, but God knows what they are meditating.
Especially when the deities are in front of you.
Yeah, deities are in front. They close their eyes and meditate on something else. Not seeing the deity.
Impersonalism.
Just a point of clarification on this. Srivatsa symbol. Explain that Srivatsa symbol appears on Krishna's chest. But the form which has appeared over here is a Narayana form. And Lakshmi is eternally residing with him. But why should she be present in the form of a top hat on his chest? We can understand she being present on the chest of Krishna and Goloka.
Because the point which is being made is that Narayana and Krishna are non-different. That's the point. And in Vaikuntha, it says that you get Swarupya Mukti, which means you have a form which is similar to the Lord. So therefore, to differentiate, one way of differentiating the Lord's form is that he has Sri Vatsa. And that shows that he is Bhagavan, he is the Supreme Personality. Okay. Your question is a good question, but that's as far as I can answer that. So it is being explained here that the Lord is without material qualities. These qualities are not material. The Lord has qualities. This is what has been described in the Bhagavatam. Bhagavat means?
Bhagavat. Full of opulence.
Yeah, opulence means variety. One of those. Bhagavat, Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? It is describing the opulence or the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam means the pastimes of the beautiful personality of Godhead. Right? He is a person. Right? He has qualities. He has attributes. Right? His form is beautiful. It is full of variety. There are so many different intricate details about him. Just like his hair. What is his hair like?
Curly locks.
Yeah, his hair is like wavy, as described. Right? When Krishna is young, right, Krishna has three ages. What are the three ages of Krishna?
Kishora.
First one is? Kaumara. Kaumara means when he's below five. Then there is?
Pauganda.
Pauganda means when he's 5 to 10. Then there is? Aishwarya. Aishwarya means when he's 10 to 15. Right? So, when Krishna is at this age of Kaumara, his hair just sits on his shoulders. Not so long yet. And then when he gets to Pauganda, right, it is slightly longer. But when he gets to Kishora, how long is Krishna's hair?
2 weeks.
Yeah, this one will be on your advance. So. I'm not going to tell you the answer. So Krishna's hair goes all the way down to his
waist,
right? When he's in Kishora age, when he gets to that age, like that. And sometimes even Balaram, they tie it in top knots, like that. So Krishna's hair is described when he's in Kishora age. It is like the feathers of a raven or a crow, right? Like the feathers. Sometimes you see the crow, like the feathers kind of sit in layers. So his hair is like, not like curly, but like sitting in layers, like that. And it says his hair has like a reddish tinge to his hair. So this is God. And you can just say he has black hair. No, but because he is a personality, there is so much detail. And for the devotees, this is relishable. They relish all the details about the Lord. Like just like we take darshan of the deities, then we should relish the deities, we should study the deities. We should become very captivated by the deities. Every part of their form, beginning from their feet all the way up to their crown. Like that. Because Krishna is a person. We have to become attracted to Krishna through his personality. That's what the Bhagavatam is describing here. He's not impersonal. He has so much detail and so much variegatedness about his personality.
So the Bhagavatam is describing all these things.
And this is the perfection of our existence, is to realize all of this. Krishna must be realized. He doesn't want to be we don't want to be theoretical about Krishna. Right? You don't want to come back for 100 more lifetimes just coming to the Bhakti Vaibhav course. Like coming back next lifetime and hearing all about it. Oh, Krishna looks like this and he looks like this. You want to realize him. You want to actually meet him face to face. You can only do that when your heart becomes pure. But you want to realize this person. You don't just want to hear about him forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. So the Bhagavatam is trying to attract us to Krishna. That's the whole point.
Maybe one can memorize Vallabhacharya's lyrics, Nayanam Madhuram, Adharam Madhuram, Sansitandhi Madhuram, Madhuram.
Who is it?
Vallabhacharya. The founder of Pushti Madhu.
He wrote that?
Madhurashtaka.
What's it called?
Madhurashtaka.
Madhurashtaka. He wrote that. Very, very famous in India. Balabhacharya wrote that.
But you disguise every under of the Lord. So when you stand in front of your deity, you can
do that. Do you have a copy of that?
Yes.
Can you give me a copy? When Kadava Muni actually realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead in person, he was greatly satisfied because his transcendental desire was fulfilled. He fell on the ground with his head bowed to offer obeisances unto the lotus feet of the Lord. His heart naturally full of love of God, with folded hands, he satisfied the Lord with prayers. Yogiji, can you read the second paragraph?
According to Patanjali, when one becomes free from all material desires, he attains his real transcendental situation, and the realization of that state is called spiritual power. In material activities, the person engages in the modes of material nature. The aspirations of such people are to be religious, to be economically enriched, to be able to gratify the senses, and last, to become one with the Supreme. According to the monists, when a yogi becomes one with the Supreme and loses his individual existence, he attains the highest stage called Kaivalya. But actually, the stage of realization of the personality of God is Kaivalya. The oneness of understanding that the Supreme Lord is fully spiritual, and that in true spiritual realization one can understand what he is. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is called Kaivalya. Or in the language of Patanjali, realization of spiritual power. His proposal is that when one is freed from material desire and fixed in spiritual realization of the self and the super self, that is called chit-chakti. In full spiritual realization, there is a perception of spiritual happiness. And that happiness is described in Bhagavad Gita as the supreme happiness, which is beyond the material senses. Trance is described to be of two kinds, samprajnata and asamprajnata, or mental speculation and self-realization. In samadhi or prasampragata, one can realize by his spiritual senses the spiritual form of the Lord. That is the ultimate goal of spiritual realization.
So what is the point?
Is it correct to understand that he has realized the paramatma feature of the Lord? Because he talks about the chit feature.
He's realized Paramatma. Paramatma realization is subordinate to Bhagavan realization. Here he is realized Bhagavan. Because Charanatma realization, Prabhupada points out in Nectar Devotion, is Shantaras. He's gone beyond Shantaras, to at least to Dasharas. Okay. So he's realized Paramatma, but then Paramatma will be seen as more than just localized. He will be seen as, he's seen him on Garuda. So when you hear of Paramatma, you don't hear of him standing on Garuda and so forth. So he's actually seeing Bhagavan. Okay.
So it's different from what Guru Maharaj saw, what he said.
We have to read his descriptions carefully. Read those descriptions. Dhruv saw Bhagavan also, because he had full Bhagavan realization. He wasn't just Paramatma realization, it was beyond Paramatma realization.
Does the Lord disappear after that? Or was it
Narada? Narada didn't earlier. Narada hadn't fully realized. He got to the level of Baba, whereas this is obviously Prema, because he's realizing the Lord. Any other points?
Paramatma realization is deep in the heart, but here we can see that Kardamama is talking outside. And Dhruva Maharaj, we can see comparison first to seeing the Lord in the heart, and the Lord suddenly disappeared. So that was Paramatma realization. And then suddenly when he disappeared, he got disturbed, so opened the eyes, and he saw actually Lord outside. So that was Paramatma realization versus Bhagavan realization.
Yeah.
Which,
yes, we are put also times who Ahmed Mata and Hassan Ahmed Mata. How mental situation and self-realization? Samadhi is called Hassan Ahmed Mata.
So this is the goal of our Krishna consciousness is Samadhi. This is the eighth level of yoga, the Ashtanga process. The Ashtanga process is to fully realize the Lord. This is called Samadhi. Sama means equipoise. D means concentration. So it means when the mind is completely fixed on one point. Just like if you go to meditation classes, they'll say meditate on one point. Now what is that one point? You have to put something in that one point. Right. So, the actual goal of Samadhi is to meditate on one point. That one point is Krishna. That's what we're meditating upon. So when his mind is perfectly fixed on the Lord, then the Lord revealed himself. That is the perfection of Krishna consciousness. That is the goal of Krishna consciousness, Samadhi. First I'll take D, like same as Jnana. Meditation, like that, D. Sama, D, like that. Same root.
So the difference between Paramatma realization and Bhagavan realization, what I understood when you did the earlier part also, is that that after Paramatma realization, then one meets the Lord of Chaitya Guru, points us to a living Guru, and we serve and then attain Bhagavan realization. Now if this was Bhagavan realization which he had, now who is the Guru? How did he achieve it without a Guru? Was there a Guru here? Or should we say that Brahma is the Guru for our practical purposes?
Brahma is the Guru. You just see who is Kardama.
Brahma.
One of his sons. Right? So the sons were already mentioned in chapter 12. The 10 sons appeared, right? So one of those sons was Narada, and out of the 10, it is said he was the most exalted, he was the pure devotee. So you see in specific succession, who is Narada's guru? Brahma. Yeah. So Kardama is his guru. There's no one else around back then. There's no one else there.
Actually, I want to ask about when we are doing meditation, I think we have a kind of a feeling over here. What is this over there? The Naisha is there, or does the Naisha get concentrated over there?
Yeah, one of the chakras is there.
Mm.
Okay. It's like you saw when Brahma became angry at the Kumaras, and Shiva came out like that. So yeah, there's something. Concentration comes from here. Like that. It's one of the chakras, so there's something. Some of the energy channel is from there. Do you see anything?
No, I feel that all the time. I feel all the time.
Yeah. It's because some energy is coming from there. It's one of the chakras.
Mm-hmm.
You're not seeing white lights or anything?
No. I think of Krishna, I feel that.
Okay. But nothing like flashing or anything?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
Oh, that's big.
I just don't want you to get...
Okay.
That's okay. Just checking. The great sage Kardama said, O supreme worshipful Lord, my power of sight is now fulfilled, having attained the greatest perfection of the sight of you, who are the reservoir of all existences. Through many successive births of deep meditation, advanced yogis aspire to see your transcendental form. So, Prabhupada mentions in the purport, based on the verse, that the Lord is situated in Shuddhasattva, which means pure goodness. And Prabhupada says in the purport, unless one is situated in the mode of goodness, there is no real pleasure. You see, in this world, people are in the mode of passion. Krishna says in the Gita, passion turns to distress. Right? So those in the mode of passion, they don't have real pleasure in their lives. They get some pleasure, but then it turns to distress. Those in the mode of ignorance are only in distress. They don't have pleasure in their life. And, as Prabhupada says, if you want to have pleasure, you have to be in the mode of goodness. So see, people in the mode of goodness, they have some peace, some happiness in their life. But it's not real peace, it's not real happiness. It's temporary. Right? Then Prabhupada says, therefore, one's body, mind and activities are situated in the service of the Lord. One is on the highest perfectional stage of goodness. This is called pure goodness or Shuddha Sattva. You have to get to this platform. Prabhupada explains that the mode of goodness is like a springboard to pure goodness. In other words, you have to practice your devotional service in the mode of
goodness.
Just like Maharaj was giving the example this morning in his class of, what was it called, that Japa clock he was talking about?
Late night
Japa clock. Maharaj was giving that example in class this morning, the late night Japa clock. He said when he was in Vrindavan many years ago, then, you know, late at night, like 9 o'clock after 9 o'clock at night, then always the same devotees would be there. Right? And they'd all kind of be wandering around the temple in the dark, and then they would meet and they'd say to each other, how many rounds have you got left? One would say 3, and then the other one would say I've got 4, and the other one would say I've got 6, like that. So this is mode of ignorance. Not doesn't mean they're in the mode of ignorance, but it means that if you practice your devotional service, right, year after year after year, and you're always chanting your japa late at night, right, it means mode of ignorance is influencing you. And mode of passion means you're probably chanting your japa on the way to work in the car. Right? You probably chant on beads, probably on Janmashtami, the rest of the time it's on the sacred clicker. Right, mode of passion. Actually it says in the scriptures you should chant japa on beads. Dulcy boots, yeah. Actually, there's your chant. So, you know, clicker means mode of passion. If you're clicking, then you should bring it down. You shouldn't be clicking more as time goes by. That means mode of passion, isn't it? So if you want to practice devotional service properly, you have to practice in the mode of goodness. Mode of goodness means you have to rise early in the morning, right? And you have to chant your japa, do your devotional activities in Brahma Muhurta. That is mode of goodness. And that's when you'll get the benefit of the devotional service. And Prabhupada says the mode of goodness is a springboard to pure goodness. And you'll get the Shuddha Sattva from practicing devotional service in the mode of goodness. So the Lord, as is being said here, the Lord is in the mode of pure goodness. And Prabhupada says in the purport based on the verse that the Lord is experiencing real pleasure. Because real pleasure can only be experienced in the platform of pure goodness. Right? Means on the spiritual platform. So Krishna is experiencing real pleasure. What we experience in this material world is not real pleasure. One devotee was saying to me this morning, it is just like a dream. And then I said to him, actually that's true, because the Bhagavad Gita says, actually it is a dream. It's not reality. Bhagavad Gita says to distinguish reality from illusion. Right? And this is a dream. Whatever pleasure we get in this world is a dream. And the real thing is what Krishna is experiencing. And Krishna divides himself into many, right? Nicho, nichanana, chetana, chetanana, bahu, right? Eko bahuna, yogadatatata. He divides himself into many for what purpose? Right? To share that pleasure that he's experiencing. So this is the position of the Lord. The Lord is in pure goodness, he's experiencing real pleasure. And when we become enlightened, we will also get onto that platform and we'll also experience that same pleasure that the Lord is experiencing. Your lotus feet are the true vessel to take one across the ocean of mundane nescience. Only persons deprived of their intelligence by the spell of the deluding energy will worship those feet with a view to attain the trivial and momentary pleasures of the senses, which even persons rotting in hell can attain. However, O my Lord, you are so kind that you bestow mercy even upon them. So, Kadama Muni is describing that some persons, they approach Krishna with a desire for sense gratification. Right? So he's saying that this is not actually what we should approach the Lord for. If you approach the Lord with those desires, the Lord will fulfill those desires. But that is not our Prabhupada quote, the karma sava karma va moksha karma udarati. So you cannot have sense gratification and Krishna. You cannot have both. We already said that last time. Spiritual life and sense gratification, they go ill together. You can't have both. I mean, you can have some mixture. That's called grihastha life. Little material pleasure, some spiritual pleasure. Although it becomes more and more apparent as time goes by that the material pleasure is not so pleasurable. That's the purpose of the Grihastha Ashram, to purify us of the attachment. So this is the purpose. So one should not approach the Lord with material desires. One should approach the Lord with spiritual desire, or the desire to serve. Just like Srila Prabhupada said that he only ever asked his spiritual master one question. What was that question? What's that?
How can I serve you?
How can I serve you? So this is the only mood that we should approach the Lord in. How can I serve you? We should not be asking for material things. Because material life and spiritual life, you cannot have both. Ultimately, you cannot have both. You can mix something in the material world in the beginning, but as you become more and more purified, if you want to attain Krishna, you have to let go of all the material desires. So Kadama is pointing this out. Very interesting. Because now listen to what he says in this verse. Therefore, desiring to marry a girl of like disposition who may prove to be a veritable cow of plenty in my married life, to satisfy my lustful desire, I too have sought the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the source of everything, for you are like a desire tree. So in the previous verse, Prabhupada points this out, it's interesting because Kardama condemns approaching the Lord with material desire. But now, in this verse, he does exactly that. He approaches Krishna with material desire. So therefore the Bhagavatam says, akama, sava karma, moksha karma, udaradi. Whatever you desire, you should approach Krishna. Whatever you desire, right? Sava karma is best. Sorry. Akama is best. Akama is best. To approach Krishna with no material desire. It's not possible to stop desiring. But we should approach Krishna with spiritual desire. How can I serve you? What will give you pleasure? What can I do for you? What do you want? That is the move. But if we can't always do that, then sava karma, okay, you may have material desires, but at least approach Krishna to fulfill those material desires. Prabhupada points out in the purport, normally it is recommended in the Vedas, if you want a good wife, you should approach goddess Uma. But he doesn't approach Uma, he approaches Vishnu, he approaches Narayana, he approaches Krishna. Because if you approach the demigod, you may get your material desire fulfilled. If you approach Krishna with material desires, Krishna may fulfill your material desires, but in such a way that you become more purified and gradually dependent upon him. In other words, he may give you what you want, what you ask for, but not in a way that you'll become more and more attached to that thing. He'll give it to you, but then he'll show you what the real nature of that thing is. Many times this has happened in my life. I desired something. Even sometimes I tried not to desire it. But for some reason it kept coming in my mind, I couldn't let go of it. And Krishna gave it to me. But then he gave it to me in such a way that I couldn't enjoy it. He said, okay, you want it? Okay, here it is. Right? I remember one time, there's something in my mind, I got attached to this thing. I kept trying to say, no, don't be attached to it, don't be attached to it, like that. But it just kept coming back in my mind. I couldn't, get detached from it. And for a long time, Krishna didn't give it to me. And then finally, he gave it to me. And then when I got it, then he ruined it. So I couldn't get any pleasure out of it. That's Krishna. Right? He'll give you what you ask for, but not in a way that you're going to become more desirous. That's the point. So, therefore, it is said in the Bhagavatam, even if you have material desires, approach Krishna. Because he will fulfill them, and not in a way that, especially if you're a sincere devotee. Right? If you're a devotee who's very materialistic, like Kanishtha, very materialistic, then Krishna will go, okay, have it. Right? But if you're sincere, if your main point in life is to please Krishna, but you can't give up your material desires, then Krishna will, maybe he'll give you those things, but he will take the taste for those things away, if you're sincere. That's the point. But the point of the Bhagavatam says, no matter what you have, then you should approach Krishna. So Prabhupada gives a very instructive purport here. Prabhupada says in the purport, the phrase like disposition is very significant. Formerly boys and girls of similar dispositions were married. The similar natures of the boy and girl were united in order to make them happy. No more than 25 years ago, Prabhupada was writing this, probably around 1970 or something like that. So 25 years would have been 1945 or something like that. Not more than 25 years ago, and perhaps it is still current, parents in India used to consult the horoscope of the boy and girl to see whether there would be factual union in their psychological conditions. These considerations are very important. Nowadays, marriage takes place without such consultation, and therefore soon after the marriage there is divorce and separation. Formerly husband and wife used to live together peacefully throughout their whole lives, but nowadays it is a very difficult task. So the husband and wife should be of a like-minded disposition. If they don't like each other, it's going to be very difficult for them to stay married. very difficult. How can you marry someone you don't like? You need to marry someone who you have similar disposition to, similar mental attributes to. So therefore, in Vedic times, and we do this in ISKCON also, when we're arranging marriages, we check the astrology, and the senior persons in the community will look at the personalities and say, yes, they are compatible. And we'll see if their compatibility, and then the marriage takes place. With the blessings of the Vaishnava and with the astrology like that. That's the Vedic system. Prabhupada says in the next paragraph, Kadama Muni wanted to have a wife of like disposition because a wife is necessary to assist in spiritual and material advancement. A wife is meant to help the husband to advance materially and spiritually. She's supposed to motivate him to become a better devotee, right? To become a better person, right? To provide for the family. She's supposed to motivate him, right? That's the duty of the wife. And similarly, the husband is meant to assist in the wife's material and spiritual advancement. He's meant to supply for her material, satisfy her materially, give her whatever she desires materially, and spiritually guide her and give her inspiration to follow him and become spiritually advanced also. That is the system. They have to be like-minded. They have to get along nicely. It's a team. If one member of the team is not cooperating, or if one member of the team is not cooperating with the other member, then materially and spiritually you don't feel inspired. Right? The wife doesn't feel inspired, the husband doesn't feel inspired, and then the marriage will fall apart. Just like Prabhupada says at the end of the purport, he says in the 12th canto of the Bhagavad Gita, in the 12th canto it is said that in Kali Yuga marriage will be based on the consideration of sex life. As soon as there is sufficiency in sex life, the question of divorce will arise. Marriage is not a material institution. It's an institution of spiritual and material compatibility. Not that it's just meant that we get pleasure from each other. Like we said in that class, I think last week, right? They did the survey and the woman said if the guy is rich, right, he'll be a good husband. And the men said, well, if she's beautiful, then she'll be a good wife. Right? But Prabhupada says in the purport, beauty is not the consideration. What is the consideration when choosing the spouse? What is the main consideration when you choose a husband or you choose a wife?
Chastity
of the husband.
Of the wife.
No, I'm saying both ways. What's the characteristic that you look for, right? In the if a husband's looking for a wife or a wife is looking for the husband, what are you looking for? Because Prabhupada says it's not beauty, it's not physical. Ultimately, that's it. But what are we looking for?
Chastity.
The husband must be chaste.
Both of them should be chaste.
That's true. Same psychological disposition. Yeah, that's true. The main thing you look for when you're looking for a partner is character. Does the person have character? What are their qualities? It's not their physical form, it's their qualities. Even the most beautiful person in the world is ugly if they don't have good character. You'll see sometimes you meet people who are very beautiful, like some women are very beautiful, and you think, my God, she's so beautiful. And then she opens her mouth and you think, right? Not a very nice person, right? So then automatically that beauty is dissipated, right? Character is the main thing. If someone has a good heart, right, the wife has a good heart, then that is the main thing that we look for. If the husband has a good heart, that is the main thing that we look for.
But
that is the main quality.
If they don't have a good heart, that means that they should not
tinged
with the most.
Say it again. If the hearts are tinged with the most, then
tinged is okay. No, I mean, tinged with the modes is okay, but not dominated by the modes. You don't want someone who's got bad qualities.
No, I'm not saying, of course for us it's good to search for that, but when we make, like for example, when someone is searching for a partner and it's not a devotee, I think we try also that there should be like at least the same psychological condition, because at least there will be no divorce and they will...
Yeah, but we're talking about devotees. What the non-devotees do, that's their business. They can do what they want. But for the devotees, this is what we look for.
Mm.
What is the quality of that person?
Mm.
Right? What is their inner qualities?
Mm.
Do they have Vaishnava qualities?
Mm.
Then we are attracted.
Mm.
That's what we look for. That's the main thing that we look for. Yeah?
Actually, in Indian marriages, they don't actually get to know each other at all.
They don't have to know each other. In the Vedic time, they didn't have to know each other. In fact, they didn't know each other. Right? In the Vedic time, right? They did the astrology. They said yes, there is compatibility. Right? And then the elders in the village would see the boy and the girl as they grew up, and they could say yes, this is going to work. That's how it works. Then they got the blessing. And then what would happen is that they would send the girl to the boy's house while the boy was out of school or whatever, and she would be trained by the mother, right, to cook for the boy and to look after the boy. And the mother would tell all about the boy. So by the time she married him, she knew him very well, and she's very attached. He may not even know who he was going to be married to. They might not have even told him. Right, he was at school, they didn't tell him what was happening. But by the time it was all around, it was a very expert system. Just like it said in the West, you marry the person you love. Just like in India we have love marriages. Right? You marry the person who you love. But in Vedic times, you love the person who you marry. And that's much better. Because that's not based on self gratification. That's what Prabhupada's pointing out here. Okay, so we'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
So next Monday we will continue from verse 16 onwards. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.